He's an animal. He belongs in the wild or in the circus on one of those tiny tricycles.
The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
But instead, I'm here behind a microphone. Coming to you from Carter Subaru Studio. Welcome back to The Big Show. 56 degrees right now. I just heard Diane say. It's July 1st. 56 degrees. That's the other problem. That's why everybody's going insane. I need to check with the meteorologists. We need to check with Cliff Mass over at the University of Washington. But Nicole, we should get Cliff on soon, because I'm trying to remember it hasn't rained that much. It's raining all the time.
Remember
just sprinkles.
April, though? April was amazing. We all knew we'd pay for it.
I don't remember that, because we were all indoors and we weren't going out and socializing.
We were out on our balconies quite a bit because it was nice.
Was that your... Yeah, I kind of remember that vaguely. But it's July. This is why people are so depressed and anxious and riddled with... I already said anxious, and I was going to say anxiety. So I was trying to come up with another word, and I couldn't. Dang it. But this is depressing. That's why I got to where it was 80 degrees last week, at least. Maybe I should go to Vegas. No, Vegas is too dirty. I don't know what I should do. I guess I'll just scream behind a microphone about how horrible everything is. I guess.
Sounds like a good plan.
Tell me what
maybe
I got.
It'll last longer. Maybe we'll have like a really nice fall too.
I hope so. I mean, if it was sunny out, if I knew that right after the show, I could put my Bluetooth speaker out on the deck and fire up a little. What should I listen to right after the show, Sean? As soon as the show's over.
Oh, wow. Well, I'd say go for some Van Morrison. That's always a nice choice.
You know what I did yesterday? And I'm not going to get too sidetracked because we got a guest coming up and I got a lot of news. But Joe Jackson. Mm. I got deep into the Joe Jackson catalog yesterday.
Yeah, he's stepping out.
He is. And he's also breaking us in two.
Don't know that one.
Or somebody, yes. Okay. Okay, let me get right to before I tease this, I want to congratulate the Seattle cops. They were so professional this morning. They were so fantastic. And I'm going to play for you in a second what they have to deal with. But they just had people screaming in their faces. They have been just brutalized verbally by our mayor and our city council and all of these, you know, anarchists running around the streets. And it's happening all across the country. You know, I told you in the last segment, a neighborhood in Minneapolis has sworn off cops, and a little boy got raped there in the park a couple of nights ago. They didn't call the police even then. So they just dropped the boy off at a hospital. It's unbelievable. But that's the vision for America. How about this? In Tennessee, little barbecue shack, somebody was going to do a support the cop event. And they said, hey, can we buy food from you? And the barbecue place said, of course you can. Yeah, that worked out well.
One local business received backlash this week after they say they were falsely accused of making a political statement with the Back the Blue rally. Owners of Schuford Smokehouse say organizers of today's Back the Blue contacted them to order food for the event. Schuford says they accepted the job because they believed it was another opportunity to offer their catering services. Once it was publicly known they took the job, the business says they have been harassed and threatened on social media.
It was not donated. It was not a reflection of our opinions, our political views. It was literally just a business transaction. And I think that's where the misunderstanding comes in. We've never discriminated on what jobs we take. If someone comes to us with money wanting to buy food, we're not going to turn away money because we are a business and that's what we're trying to run.
Schuford says they canceled the order because of threats to burn down of their business.
A barbecue shack says, yeah, you can buy food from us. Of course you can. And the whack job leftist anarchist said, well, we're going to burn your place down then. And they had to cancel the order. The terrorists are winning. The terrorists are winning. All right, with that as mere prelude, let's get to the big lead.
The big lead. Top story.
Let me just give you an example of what the cops in Seattle Police Department had to deal with this morning as they finally took back Capitol Hill. So this woman, the cops are all lined up across the street. They didn't want anybody, you know, they're pushing the mob back. Listen to this woman that they had to deal with.
Aren't you wearing your mask in the middle of a pandemic? Aren't you wearing your mask in the middle of a pandemic? Why don't you care about people's lives? Did you know that if you wear your mask and I wear my mask, it protects both of us? That I'm the only one protecting you and you and you and you and you and you? You're wearing a mask, but not over your mouth and nose. Thank you for wearing your mask in the middle of the pandemic, sir. Thank you for...
It's just crazy people they have to deal with, screaming in their face, marching up and down their line. And their restraint, their resolve to protect the city, to protect the region, and their professionalism this morning as they took back Capitol Hill, as they undid the tragic, disastrous wrong that Jenny Durkin inflicted on the city for the last month. Great job by Seattle Police. I'm proud to call many of those guys friends. Up next in the big lead.
The big lead. Dory Monson show exclusive.
I'm excited to talk to this guy because, you know, as we said, why did they take it back? Well, because there were rapes at CHOP. That was no big deal, apparently, to city politicians. 19-year-old murdered a week and a half ago. That was no big deal. Residents, business owners, families being terrorized for week upon week upon week. That was acceptable. But, some of the people at CHOP marched to Jenny Durkin's house this weekend. All of a sudden, it was, call the police! Send them in! We're ending this thing! Because after a month of inflicting this insanity on the residents of Capitol Hill, when they marched to Jenny Durkin's gated waterfront mansion, that's when she finally had enough. And there's a great column about all of this today at hotair.com. This guy's one of my favorite columnists. I think this is the first time I've had him on the Dory Monson show. Jazz Shaw from hotair.com. Jazz, I love your work, man.
Hey, thanks for having me. You know, I have not lived in Seattle since 85, I think. It's been a long time. I did used to live right outside of there, and I worked down at the shipyard down there for a while when I was a young man. Okay. Oh, yeah, I loved it. I lived in, is it Burien? It's one of the little suburbs outside of there. Yeah, I lived there when I was a young man, just starting my post-military career. Always loved the area.
Well, because I follow you on Twitter, and it sounds like, are you in the nether reaches of New England somewhere now?
Yeah, I'm in upstate New York, not to be confused with New York City. I'm up in the boonies, up where you get into the Adirondack Mountains. So,
because I've always wondered why you write about Seattle so much. I didn't know about your personal history living here. So you have a column up this afternoon at hotair.com. Seattle mayor was unhappy. CHOP people approached her house. So from afar, as you've been watching all this madness unfold here, Jazz, what's your take on what's transpiring in your former hometown?
Well, we have some contacts out there that have been following it on the ground firsthand. And, of course, you know, there's a lot of press on the ground when they're not getting pepper sprayed. But because apparently it's okay to pepper spray the press, just not the people who took over an entire police precinct.
Right.
the mayor's position the whole time, this smarmy, you know, why are you afraid of democracy, Donald Trump, the whole thing. Until people showed up at her house who had been going around and burning and raping and looting and pillaging, and maybe they weren't going to do it to her, but she got nervous even, well, you put me and my family in danger because you showed up and I'm supposed to have a secret place where I live and nobody's supposed to know. Well, I noticed, Dory, that, you know, all the people inside the CHOP zone they don't have the benefit of being anonymous. Most of them are in the modern internet equivalent of the Yellow Pages. You can look them up, sure, and you can go loot their stores and, you know, rape their wives or whatever you want to do at will. But you're not supposed to go after the mayor. And I have to agree with you. It's kind of coincidental. Right after that happened, suddenly the chop zone's gone. So well done, mayor. But, yeah, you know.
But I mean, what,
isn't that
amazing?
A little hypocritical? A little hypocritical? I mean, something?
What's amazing, Jazz, is a week and a half ago, a 19-year-old kid was gunned down in cold blood, and very few people have been reporting the truth of what's happening, because for some reason they've been spinning this summer of love and it's a peaceful protest. Now, it was largely a bunch of heroin addicts who had a new encampment, and then gangs that sell drugs came to, because that's where the customers suddenly were, and this was a drug gang street war that, you know, left five people shot, two of them dead, and yet here you have public officials who are still pushing Summer of Love. It's really been one of the more incredible things I've seen in my 25 years on the air here.
Well, my normal base of operations when I have to get out around for the past two decades or so are New York City, Baltimore, and Philadelphia. And anybody who follows the national news, you'll know that the stuff going on in Seattle in some ways, and I'm not trying to minimize what you're going through, it's scaled up in some cities with much larger populations and much larger gangs that are far more well-organized, particularly in Baltimore.
Sure.
And I spend a good amount of time down there. So I don't think anybody's surprised by that. And I also don't think anybody's surprised by a lot of the major media outlets' refusal to talk about that because it doesn't fit the narrative. It's like, well, these are mostly peaceful protesters and a few bad apples. Well, right, my response to that, Dory, is when I go out there and I go on radio and TV, when I go right at Hot Air and I say, you know, most of the cops are really good people, good men and women, and there are a few bad apples and they need to be weeded out and punished, I get called a racist apologist. You know, so, and I think there's a lot more bad, quote, protesters than there are bad cops. I'm not saying there aren't bad cops, Dory.
Right,
there are.
Right, right.
We find them. They cop. But, the media hypocrisy on this is possibly worse than even the mayor's hypocrisy.
Well, and, you know, just playing off what you were just saying, Javs, the 16-year-old kid who was killed this weekend, by all accounts, he was executed. They walked up to the car. He was still moving. Somebody said, oh, you're not dead yet, huh? I mean, we have the audio of this. You're not dead yet. You want to get pistol whipped? And then they fired the kill shot at this 16-year-old kid. And nobody even knows his name. And if cops had shot 20 times at a vehicle with two children inside, the nation would be on fire this afternoon. But because this was chop security, there are crickets. And that is absolutely mind-blowing to me.
Oh, man, you have to email me a link to that video because I will absolutely publicize this. I just gave my email to your producer a little while ago. So
I'll get it to you.
Yeah, get that to me, man. And I will make, I'm following her on Twitter, but now I'll make sure I follow you on Twitter. I'm not on the West Coast, so I don't get everybody, but I want to hear what's going on out there.
Well, you've seemed to have your finger on the pulse better than most, as far away as you are, chronicling this, because here's the last paragraph or part of it from Jazz Shaw's piece at Hot Air this afternoon. He writes about Jenny Durkin. Does this woman have any idea how elitist and out of touch she sounds? Residents of her city are literally being shot, killed, sexually assaulted, and robbed while the police are told to stand down. But somehow a protest outside her house is what qualified as stepping over the line. That was brilliant. I mean, that's just, you absolutely nailed this.
Yeah, and I don't want to, I realize I sound disparaging. I say it about my own former hometown of New York City. I say it about Baltimore. I say it about Philadelphia. Today, I mentioned it about Seattle. If you keep electing these whack jobs over and over again, who are willing to put their own personal liberal politics over the health and, in fact, lives of their citizens, there comes a point where the rest of the country stops having quite as much sympathy for you because you keep voting them in.
Well, and I'll give you one more that you might want to write about. I had an exclusive a couple of weeks ago, Jazz. Are you aware that...
Oh, I love a good exclusive.
Okay. Well, are you aware when Jenny Durkin was U.S. attorney? And remember the Bundy family down in Oregon taking over the wildlife preserve?
Oh, yeah.
Jenny Durkin,
I wrote about that.
Jenny called for the feds to be called in and to stop these right-wing anarchist extremists. And she, I mean, on the first day, she wanted the feds to come in and squash that. And I have audio of that as well. But when left-wing anarchist extremists come into her city, she had nothing to say or do about it until, you know, two kids were dead.
The Bundys were the end of the world because they were taking over federal taxpayer paid for property. And that's unacceptable.
Yep.
You know, there's one more story breaking today in case you want to look into it. We can talk about it now on this segment and maybe you can do something else with it later. You're probably familiar with Judicial Watch, right?
Sure. Absolutely.
And this doesn't have to do, thankfully, with rapes, murders and the other stuff going on. But the mayor of Washington, D.C., went out there and participated with a bunch of people grabbing a bunch of paint and block painting Black Lives Matter in 20-foot high letters across a public street. Judicial Watch put in a permit request saying that, you know, we would like to have permission. We have paint and we're going to go paint on the street one block over. No one is above the law. And they were refused and threatened with legal action. So I just think that's just such a prescient moment in this movement because the mayor of the capital of the country is out there and defaced the streets with no permit, nothing, participating with people who were not out there with a permit. And then when somebody else wanted to write, no one is above the law, they got threatened.
Unbelievable. That is good stuff. Well, Jazz, it's a pleasure having you on. Everybody should check out Jazz Shaw's stuff at hotair.com. He's also a must-follow on Twitter. And let's stay in touch, okay? Love talking with you.
Absolutely. Have me on again, man. I will chat with you anytime you like.
I guarantee I'll take you up on that. All right, thanks, Jazz. Jazz Shaw, hotair.com, Twitter, at Jazz Shaw. He's one of those guys who's sent out some like a... How many tweets has he sent out? Something like 120,000. He's just always tweeting, but he's a good man. All right. And by the way, we have gotten word. Jenny Durkin has not said anything publicly since the 16-year-old child was murdered in her creation, CHOP, last weekend. She hasn't spoken about that at all. And so she has a press conference scheduled for 2:30. It'll be Jenny Durkin and Carmen Best, and we are going to carry that live here on the Dory Monson Show and on Cairo Radio. So we'll bring that to you coming up in just a few minutes. That is your Big Lead this hour.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
What will the mayor finally say after days of silence? Kids murdered in the CHOP that she created. But finally, they take it back because some protesters marched to her house. That was a bridge too far. We'll hear from the mayor. Carry it live coming up here on the Dory Monson Show. We are waiting on the Jenny Durkin press conference. Carmen Best will be with her as well. This morning, Seattle police did a fantastic job taking back Capitol Hill. And I'll repeat what I said a couple hours ago. I get annoyed when people say, we're taking back CHOP. Now, CHOP was this little dystopian, you know, land of whatever, that we didn't take back. We're trying to restore Capitol Hill. I like Capitol Hill. You know, yeah, it's a goofy neighborhood. But man, when I was 16 years old, I worked at a print shop up on Capitol Hill, and I was working 60-hour weeks. And I would, you know, walk around all over Capitol Hill you know, for lunch, for dinner. So it's going to school full time too. And but I got to know the whole place so well. And it's just, you know, parts of it are just unrecognizable now. And I feel bad for the longtime residents who, you know, at one time they had just one of the classic neighborhoods in the country. And now it's just being defined by a group of anarchists. We're waiting on Jenny Durkin's press conference with Carmen Best. And I'm curious if she will address why today. Because to me, and you can text me if you think I'm wrong about this, but they put up with neighbors and families and businesses being terrorized, like I was talking about with Jazz Shaw. They put up with that for a month. Jenny Durkin couldn't care less. She just said, oh, no, it's a peaceful expression of people who just want to do better for our country. And it was such a fantasy that she was trying to spin. And everybody that was up there said, no, it's Mogadishu. But inflicting terror on the neighbors, on the residents, on her constituents, no problem. The rapes that were happening apparently were not enough of a concern. 19-year-old murdered. 16-year-old murdered. I mean, it got a big meh from Jenny Durkin. But man, protesters went to her house. Jenny Durkin, who always tells Trump how outrageous he is for wanting to build a wall. And she lives in a gated, walled, $12 million waterfront mansion herself. That's always intrigued me. All of the anti-wall people who love putting up walls, you know, like CNN. I just heard this yesterday. The CNN Center down in Atlanta. Every host on that station for 4 years has been just screaming, you can't build a wall. And then when the rioters went through Atlanta and smashed the windows at CNN Center, what'd they do? They built a wall. They put up a fence 10 feet out from the building encircling the CNN Center. So the rioters, the protesters, the anarchists, they couldn't get in. Did CNN cover that? Did they officially renounce their anti-wall position? Nah. They love walls for themselves, just not for the rest of us. Jenny Durkin, she loves living behind a wall, but the rest of us are racist if we want a wall for our country. There's just no other way to explain it other than sheer hypocrisy. So Linda, who lives on Capitol Hill, one of my favorite emailers, she said, Jenny Durkin's new campaign slogan, my life matters. Yeah, that's what it took. It took protesters going to her house, and finally she said, okay, now I've had enough of this nonsense. I was willing to put up with the rapes and murders, but now they're outside my mansion. That, they've gone too far. Think she'll talk about that in her presser? Think anybody will ask her about that? I hope so. Why today? Why right after they marched? Why has she not spoken about this since the murder of the child last weekend? She released a statement about how Sawant has to be removed from the council because Sawant led protesters to her home. She was able to release that statement, but nothing about the 16-year-old kid who died in the monster you created? So will she talk about it? Will people ask her about it? They're running 9 minutes late. Also from Linda on Capitol Hill, she wrote, watching the police give us back part of Capitol Hill begs the question, what took so long? Jenny Durkin is directly responsible for the deaths and injuries there the past 3 weeks. As Donald Trump would say, she's a disgrace. I admire the SDOT employees having to clean up the mess, but I resent the heck out of the city they are having to do so. Imagine the cost and better things they could be doing with their time had this never been allowed to exist. While it's a relief this nightmare seems to be over, I remain extremely frustrated. And that's from listener Linda. One other thing. You know, I was kind of sorry that I was on vacation last week when they announced they're changing the name of the Seattle Center Coliseum to the Climate Pledge Arena. And they had a big press conference, and they talked about how they're going to be the most green hockey arena in the NHL because all of the ice is going to be made from rainwater. They're going to have a system, cisterns, to gather rainwater off the roof. I'm still going to call it the Seattle Center Coliseum. I always have. I always will. But they're going to gather the rainwater off the roof and use that rainwater to make their ice. And I was thinking, every drop of fresh water we have in the world started as rainwater or melted snowfall. Gathering it off your roof is no greener than taking the city water supply that comes out of the Tolt River. And I had a great email from listener Scott, who wrote, regarding the Climate Pledge Arena, so the CPA is going to use rainwater for the ice rink. Every drop out of every tap in every Seattle house is rainwater. Oh, recovered rainwater for the ice. Let's do the math. NHL ice rink is 17,000 square feet. I love guys who do the math like Scott did. NHL ice rink is 17,000 square feet. Thickness of the ice between 3/4 and 1 inch. Let's be generous and call it an inch. 1 cubic foot holds 7.4 gallons. Is that about 8,000 gallons? And since the ice water is recoverable, this is a one-shot 8,000 water use. One person uses 70 to 90 gallons per day. Let's say 80. So this elaborate rainwater recovery system built for the CPA will save what one person will use in 100 days. Way to go, Seattle. Suckered again. That's from listener Scott. I like it, Scott. Look, almost everything in corporate America now is putting on a show and not about doing good. You know, whether it's the, you know, it's every message that's being pumped out right now. But yeah, you really want to do a climate pledge? Don't build a hockey arena that takes 17,000 people, most of them using cars to get there. Just forgo that. Jenny Durkin has just stepped up to the microphone. We'll bring you to that press conference live here on Cairo Radio.
The work we are doing and must continue to do to live up to this moment in our nation's history and to meet the demands of community to reimagine policing and to invest in our communities. For weeks, we had peaceful demonstrations on Capitol Hill. While thousands have peacefully protested in the area over the last weeks, the public safety threats in recent weeks have been well documented. The multiple acts of gun violence have resulted in tragic deaths of 2 individuals, both of them teenagers. Multiple others were seriously wounded. For weeks, I have been consulting with city departments and particularly with Chief Best and Chief Scoggins on the best ways to reduce the number of people in the area, provide services to homeless individuals, reduce impacts in neighborhoods, and increase public safety. Despite our continued efforts to de-escalate and bring community messengers in, including personally having conversations with demonstrator organizations on Friday, the deteriorating conditions and repeated gun violence required us to immediately address public safety concerns. From conversations over the weekend, it was clear that many individuals would not leave and that the impacts to the community could not be reduced and public safety could not be improved until they did leave. An operation of this scope and magnitude takes significant resources and planning, particularly by the Seattle Police Department. Over the last 2 weeks, city departments and SPD, under Chief Best's leadership, have been devising a range of operational plans. I am very grateful for Chief Best's leadership and for SPD's work. For days, they have had to design and practice the operation that began this morning. So late last night, after consulting with Chief Best and my other departments, I issued an executive order asking city departments to work together to address public health and public safety concerns, as well as the sustained damage to Cal Anderson Park and the East Precinct area. I'm hoping to meet with the families of the gun victims so I can directly express my condolences for the loved ones they lost in those senseless acts of violence. I know they too have been on Capitol Hill. These acts of violence hurt our whole community, and they are also in direct contrast to the message ringing from the streets that Black lives matter. I will continue to refocus our energy on the hard but critical work to answer the voices demonstrating and demanding change, to reimagine with Chief Best what policing looks like in our city, and to invest in the true health and safety of our communities. No city, including Seattle, will dismantle centuries of systemic racism overnight. But we must act now. We must answer to history. I said from the onset that Capitol Hill has a rich history of being at the epicenter of protests and change. I marched and participated in many events on Capitol Hill, particularly for LGBTQ rights. Capitol Hill is the heart of the gay community. Cal Anderson Park is named for the first openly gay state legislator, and East Barbara Bailey Way that leads to the park is named for Barbara Bailey, a lifetime community leader and friend. But now that space has a new and shared history of civil rights. There is no question we must find a way to memorialize that history that has transpired there over the last month. Our parks and arts departments are actively working with the individuals who are maintaining the community garden and with artists to preserve their work. But we will also engage community, residents, and businesses on how we can memorialize the protests in the public realm, such as a new garden, a speaker's corner, or new art. For the many arrests this morning, I believe charges should not be filed against individuals arrested only for misdemeanor obstruction, failure to disperse, or trespassing. I fully support SPD's operations this morning, and the arrests and bookings were appropriate. But as we move forward in healing, alternatives to charging and criminal sanctions are also important. In a moment, I'll speak more on how I am thinking our city priorities can answer community demands. But I want to speak briefly about the future of the East Precinct and Capitol Hill community. Part of rethinking policing should also be the long-term failures of how police and community resources are present in community. We need to have true community spaces with connections to community-based organizations, health clinics, and restorative justice programs. Capitol Hill was the entrance to the Central District, where Black community and communities of color can no longer call home. When I grew up, the Central District was about 75% African American. Today, it's less than 14%. Their histories, their shops, their homes, their gathering spots have largely been erased. But strong reminders of the work we have to do remain. One of our city's oldest churches, established in 1886, First AME, sits just a block from the East Precinct. I've been working and talking with Black leaders on a plan to create a space on Capitol Hill to support community voices in rethinking and reimagining policing and the greater investments we need to make in Black prosperity, health, and brilliance. These conversations are ongoing and must be led by community itself. We hope to have more to share on that soon. In addition, I want to thank again Reverend Harriet Walden for her leadership and reminding us of the importance of the East Precinct, whose history is rooted in Black-led organizing. In addition to resources in the budget, she will be leading outreach about long-term futures of the East Precinct. I truly believe we can reimagine a space, a shared space, including a community room in the East Precinct and things in and around Capitol Hill in the East Precinct. In order to move forward, we must recommit to the message that brought tens of thousands of residents from in and around the city to the streets, demanding change. We must remember that it was the unjust murder of George Floyd that ignited a global movement, including here in Seattle, calling for changes to policing, a concerted effort to undo centuries of systemic racism, and broad investments in the community. I am committed to this work, and it's there where I expand and focus my energies. After meeting with community leaders and organizations, demonstrators, business, and residents in the last 3 weeks, and hearing their demands for change, my administration and I are focusing on key areas to address the systemic inequities in Seattle. First, investing in Black communities. Second, investing in young people. Third, rethinking and reimagining policing, including culture and budget. Last, accountability and reform, including statewide reforms of laws governing police unions and investigations. True public safety comes from a healthy and resilient community, and that's only possible if we invest in them. For the last year, we have been working to return legacy properties to the Black ownership. These include Bird Bar Place, formerly known as Camp, and the Central Area Senior Center. We've been in close communication with Africatown about them acquiring Fire Station 6. Last week, their architect and the city had a walkthrough of the facility, and we look forward to continued discussions. Community leaders have stated that the long process is part of the problem, and I agree. We are going to expedite it. I've also committed to investing $100 million in my 2021 budget into community investments focused on improving the lives of our BIPOC communities. We have to invest in young people and youth opportunities. We cannot achieve justice without educational justice. This truth is what guided our city and programs over the last 2 years of being mayor, including making free college for every Seattle high school student a reality and ensuring that we have free transit passes to get them to and from school or anywhere in their city. As an intermediate action, as part of my budget rebalancing package, I committed $5 million for mentoring and summer learning for Black youth. My office has been working with DEAL and community stakeholders on a proposal to allocate those funds, and they should be ready to announce soon. Black youth are not just the future of their community, they're the future of Seattle. We must invest in that future. We will be rethinking and reimagining policing, including budgeting, and have been working very closely with Chief Best, who is one of the best leaders in this country on policing, and herself is committed to seeing that we can protect public safety and at the same time reimagine how our department does its work. This means deploying the right person with the right skills into a situation. And sometimes that's a mental health specialist, domestic violence counselor, or addiction counselor. We've created programs like this in Seattle to reduce 911 calls for service, including Seattle Fire Department's Health One, which is a mobile medical clinic that addresses low acuity situations. And nurses and social workers can show up. We've also added nurses to our homeless shelters, and we will continue to expand on programs like this. Creating training and building these new health-centered responses will not happen overnight, but we know what works, and more importantly, community knows what works. As an immediate step, tens of millions of dollars have been cut from SPD's budget, but Chief Best is conducting a deep review of the budget to assess what functions might be moved to other departments and what the core functions of the department are. She and I will never compromise public safety, but we believe we can reimagine policing and investment community. Let's lead the nation, Seattle, and show how this work can be done. In addition to making SPD's budget transparent, I'm committed by finding more ways to partner with the community to ensure that they have a say in what policing looks like in our city. BIPOC communities have been left behind for far too long, and it's imperative that our budget reflect our commitment to investing in those communities. Undoing centuries of systemic racism will not happen overnight, as I've said before. But I do believe Seattle can lead the way in addressing injustices and ensuring everyone, regardless of their race, can achieve their full potential. Racism is hardwired into our institutions and permeates almost every aspect of our society. We can only begin to undo the trauma and injustice by centering the voices of the people who have been most impacted. What I'm committed to doing is putting in the work and working with community to creating that true, lasting, generational change that this time in history demands of all of us. I ask the rest of Seattle to join me in that. And now I'll give you Chief Best.
We've had a tremendous citywide effort today. Hundreds of police officers from Seattle and our mutual aid partners from Bellevue and from the Washington State Patrol focused on one task, peacefully assisting with the long and difficult job of cleaning up these streets. Since 5 o'clock this morning, we've made over 3 dozen arrests for failure to disperse, obstruction, assault, and unlawful weapon possession, and a few other crimes. If you have watched the news footage, you have seen how absolutely devastating the damage to this neighborhood is. I can tell you personally, after walking through the area, we walked the full perimeter, I was just stunned by the number of the amount of graffiti, garbage, and property destruction. As we walked around the neighborhood, many people were coming out of their apartments and homes and thanking the officers profusely being there for helping to clean out the area. So we don't even know how much trauma people were experiencing because of what was happening in that area. Our officers are now inside of the East Precinct, surveying the damage and assessing when we'll be able to return to the building and to return to serving the people in the area. I want to have our officers back in the precinct so we can reduce the call times for 911 responses to calls for service and be more receptive to the needs of the neighborhood. I want to close by saying a big part of the work before us is creating a framework, a plan for what community safety will look like in Seattle from here on out. I have heard the demand for change. I agree change must happen, but this is nothing we can do alone. We need to re-envision community safety together. This isn't about reform and outlines mandated by a court. This is about humanity. This is about breaking down systemic racism and letting the community lead the effort for reconciliation and for peace between community and police. And following will be Sam Zimbabwe from ESCOM.
Thank you. Sam Zimbabwe, the director of the Seattle Department of Transportation. Just very briefly, our activities today, starting a little bit before 7, we had crews on the ground, about 35 to 40 people overall throughout the day. Removing the traffic control that was there, concrete barriers, other signs that had been installed to change the traffic pattern and resetting the traffic pattern as it had been previously. That went very successfully. All of the concrete barriers that had been there before have been removed. We have installed some concrete barriers to create a safe perimeter around the precinct just immediately adjacent to the curb lane. I'll also talk very briefly about our next steps with regards to art and art that was produced in the protest zone. We've been working with the CHOP Council and artists that had produced art in the area as we were taking apart barriers and disassembling what was up there. We work with artists to secure that, bring it offsite so it can be secured. The city does not have, is not taking ownership of that in any way. We're trying to facilitate the next steps with community around what can be done, how that can be repurposed, how that can be something that's shared. We're not seeking to take ownership of, at all of art, and have sought to preserve and protect that. We have secured what was there, brought it to a secure offsite location. I think I will turn it over to Jason Johnson from the Human Services Department.
Good afternoon, Jason Johnson with the Human Services Department. The city's Human Services Department has been on the ground outside and inside the area and vicinity around the East Precinct and Cal Anderson Park since June 23rd, since last Tuesday. We're there to support the city's ongoing efforts to keep the area safe. Starting last Tuesday, HSD organized a service resource hub on Pine and Broadway, which served as an outreach staging area to place people directly and connect them to services. This is in addition to outreach being done inside of the CHOP area. HSD is continuing this outreach today, following the closure of Cal Anderson Park and the areas outside of the East Precinct. We want to make sure that we're engaging with people that may still be outside of the perimeter. The area in and around Cal Anderson Park has historically been an area where unsheltered individuals stay overnight. We also know that a number of individuals who came to be part of the movement and have their voices heard were experiencing housing instability. This sustained outreach effort began following conversations between city leadership, as well as community leaders and organizers, to ensure that community members and demonstrators had access to services. And I want to thank all of these stakeholders for their engagement to bring social services to people in need in that area. The navigation team has been, as I mentioned, engaged since last Tuesday. And through yesterday, they were able to make 148 engagements with unhoused individuals. They were able to make 30 referrals to shelter, connect 26 individuals to other service providers, and provided diversion services, which got 17 individuals into hotels. These figures don't include any of the activities today, but provide a snapshot of the kind of services that were made available to individuals experiencing homelessness in the area throughout the week. Outreach staff also made travel arrangements, provided basic needs such as bottled water and food, also made sure that people had access to dry clothing. We had a number of community-based organizations that were also part of this effort. Mary's Place, Evergreen Treatment Services, Youth Care, Teen Feed, Public Health, Country Doctor, and others were on site to make sure that people had what they needed. On Saturday, HSD coordinated services with DESC's mobile crisis team to work on site at the CHOP, providing behavioral health outreach and service support. The mobile crisis team can refer people to shelter and offer limited cash assistance funding provided by the Human Services Department to provide hotel stays or travel vouchers to home communities and make sure that there are important connections to behavioral health services. While the executive order issued today directed multiple city departments to safely close the area around the East Precinct and Cal Anderson Park, this was not a navigation team led effort or a encampment removal activity. However, throughout the week, HSD directed its navigation team outreach staff to focus solely on outreach to this area. Outreach workers had access to city-funded shelters, such as tiny house villages, enhanced shelters, de-intensification shelters at some city facilities, as well as the recently reopened City Hall shelter. All resources generally reserved for the navigation team outreach. On average, the outreach specialists were out in the field with around 53 available shelter beds every day. In closing, HSC remains committed to supporting communities during their time of need. We saw great need in this area. It's why we wanted to be engaged. It's why we continue to be engaged even today. I want to thank the organizers, leaders, community members, and city staff who stayed in communication and coordination with one another throughout the demonstration and throughout the department's and city efforts. Because of these cooperative efforts, people were connected to shelter, received services, and at the very least were connected to someone who cared and could help them navigate. Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Jesus Aguirre. I'm the superintendent of Seattle Parks and Recreation. So this morning, after the other agencies did some of their work, Seattle Parks and Recreation crew went into the park to continue the work of cleaning, begin assessing the damage, and begin some of the repair in the park. In addition to that, we supported the removal of some of the supplies and equipment that were set up in the kitchen area by some organizers there. We supported moving that to an outside location controlled by those folks. Also worked with the gardening organizers to secure some of the plantings there. We're actually going to be storing some of the plants in our greenhouse as we begin a discussion about a permanent presence for a garden at Cal Anderson. Over the coming days, we're going to continue our work cleaning, removing graffiti, assessing the damage, preparing some of the damage that's been done to the park, doing some landscape maintenance, irrigation repair, etc., and also working closely with SPU to assess any infrastructure, any remediation of the infrastructure over the reservoir. As we move forward, as I mentioned, we have had a chance to work with the gardening organizers, Marcus Henderson, on a couple of occasions, and we're going to continue to have discussions with him and others about establishing a permanent presence there, jointly with Parks and Recreation, as well as with the Department of Neighborhoods, who operates a PFAS system in the city. In addition, as we continue to remove graffiti, we're also working, as Sam said, to preserve any of the art that's in the park, and again, look for opportunities to ensure that can remain. Specifically, there's a mural that was painted in the bathroom, Black Lives Matter mural that we're going to keep there. We'll continue to work with the Art Council to support that. And then, as the mayor said, in the coming days, we're going to be working with various stakeholders, community members, to ensure that there is continued presence in the park that recognizes the efforts of the protesters, the efforts of the Black Lives Matter organization. And we look forward to working with you.
Thank you. I want to note again that this shows just a part of what went into this morning, but over the last 3 weeks, almost every city department was touched in some ways by either supporting protesters, trying to mitigate damages, trying to provide services. It was always a very fluid situation in that area. And in talking to Chief Best and others, we worked very purposefully over the last weeks to make sure that those who were there for protest could exercise their First Amendment rights. But then as things started to change, we saw many of the protesters leave and with large national attention, other people attracted to the area. It was really important for us to reduce the footprint, to reduce the number of people there, to provide them services consistently, and then to work across all our departments to make sure that this was never going to be just a Seattle Police Department effort. As you saw today, it required so many departments from the city of Seattle to not just restore the area, but to make sure that the people in the park had the services they need, that we did consistent outreach, and that we had a range of support, everything from Santa Cans from SPU to City Light having to check to see if power was cut, to the facilities people having to come and repair some of the building damage. So this has been an all effort by every department. But I particularly, Chief Scoggins isn't here, couldn't be here, but I want to thank him and Chief Best for their very strong leadership over the last 3 weeks. But even before that, throughout the pandemic. But it has been Chief Best who has had a very steady hand, and her team. I can't thank the Seattle Police Department and the officers of the police department today for their work. We saw very volatile situations last week where other city departments could not respond because of the volatility of the area. And that meant that the Seattle Police Department had to take a greater role. So I want to thank them for that. And with that, we'll take some questions.
Mayor. One moment, please. Just as a reminder, Mayor, I will let you first address some questions in the room, then we will go to people on the WebEx, and then we'll come back to you.
Two in the room, two on the web.
That sounds great.
Sounds good.
Hi, Mayor. We heard from some people who say the city is ultimately responsible for the loss of light. For not stepping in quicker to clear it. What regrets do you have of how the city has handled this?
I think I deeply, deeply regret the loss of life. And as I said, I want to meet with the families to express my condolences. We'll have lots of opportunity to do after actions on what people could have done at what junctures. As you saw this morning, an operation of this scope and magnitude takes very careful planning across many departments. And with the number of people who have been in that area previously, we would not have been able to do this operation. If you have thousands of people in there, it's a very different operation than if you have 100 or fewer.
You know, a number of business owners within the top area have been quite frustrated at how long it is taking to what we saw this morning. I'm wondering if you can address that and maybe talk about some of the financial support that might be available to them, especially knowing that they've obviously seen a great impact because of the COVID-19 crisis leading up to.
Yeah, that's a great question. The question was a lot of the businesses in the area had already been suffering impacts because of the COVID-19 closures, and this created more impacts upon them. What kind of financial resources would be available? Very important. I've met with business and residents, and we're going to do a number of things. One, I've talked to my Office of Economic Development to see what resources we can provide to businesses as quickly as we can to support them. In addition, I've been talking to the city attorney's office to see if we can do expedited payment of any smaller tort claims so that if people have lost revenues, they're damaged to property and the like, that we can pay those on a very quick and expedited basis with as little paperwork as possible. Obviously, some of the larger claims that have been filed in court may take longer for the lawyers, but I want those businesses to get what they need to reopen and stay open. I heard very clearly from them the pain of seeing their businesses closed, the graffiti on the walls, calling back their employees, but not yet able to open. Preview of coming attractions, we're seeing the numbers of COVID cases go up significantly in Seattle and King County. And so we know that having businesses operate safely is critical to them and their workers. So I'm going to do everything I can to mitigate the impacts for those businesses.
Thank you, Mayor. Our first question today will come from Sydney Brownstone, Seattle Times, followed by Justin Carter, Capitol Hill, Seattle. Sydney, the floor is yours.
Thanks, Anthony. Yes, my question is for Mayor Durkin. Do you bear any responsibility for the deaths of the two teenagers at the CHOP over the last 2 weeks?
So as I said, I think that is deeply regretful what happened to the two people who were killed as well as the two people in the hospital. I want to make sure that I can meet with those parents, express my condolences, and also say that I think that there's many ways in which the city of Seattle could be better. We don't know yet enough about those shootings to determine exactly who did it, but it should never happen in the city of Seattle.
Thank you, Mayor. Our next question will be from Justin Carter, Capitol Hill, Seattle. Justin, the floor is yours.
Hi, thank you. Thank you very much. And this is for the mayor. So this morning, we again saw many officers with their badge numbers covered. Is it time for you to send a stronger message about what the community expects and demands from its police force?
I don't know about that. I'm going to let Chief Best answer that question because I'm not a bit aware of what was happening in the field. But we've made very clear what the rule is for Seattle Police Department, and she'll address that.
Is that Justin that was asking the question? Hi, Justin. We will make sure we follow up on that. Badge numbers, as you know, have been legislated and should not be covered at any time by the morning ban. So if that occurred, we will make sure that we follow up on it. We have plenty of video, lots of body-worn camera that was out there, and many, many media. And so we will make sure that we follow up on that, but the rules have not changed. So thank you for inquiring, and I'll make sure that I follow up.
Great. Thank you very much, Chief, and thank you, Mayor. Our next question will come from Lily Fowler, Crosscut, followed by Hannah Scott, Cairo Radio. Lily? Lily, the floor is yours.
Hi, thanks. This question is for Mayor Durkin. Just wondering what she makes of the statement that was released today by Attorney General William Barr praising the action that took place this morning. And then I think Trump's spokesperson also said something about restoring order.
So thank you for the question, Lily. I think I've made it clear from the outset that I don't think that the president or his administration's comments have been helpful. In fact, there's no question that they have made the situation more volatile, including some threats on Facebook that some patriots would come this 4th of July to liberate the area. I think that's made it more difficult. I would urge the Attorney General to restore lawfulness to Pennsylvania Avenue.
Thank you, Mayor. Our next question will be from Hannah Scott, Cairo Radio, followed by Simone Del Rosario, Q13 News. Hannah? Hannah, the floor is yours.
Hi, thank you both. This is for both Mayor Durkin and Chief Best, either who would like to weigh in. This morning, as the top area was being cleared out, I heard many of the protesters who did eventually leave peacefully promising that they would be back. What, if anything, is being done to ensure that they don't return and try to set up again, either at the park or in up on Pine near the East Precinct, as well as anywhere else in the city?
Hi, Hannah. Thanks for that question. First, let me just start by saying that we respect everyone's right of the First Amendment free speech. So if they want to come back, if anybody wants to protest and do so peacefully and exercise their right, we certainly encourage that. What we can't have is what we saw there, an area that where people were entrenched, where crimes and lawlessness were occurring, where people were being assaulted, rape, robbery, and as you know, two murders. So there's no situation or circumstance that I can see where as a police chief, I would condone that kind of behavior going on in any part of the city at any time, which is one of the reasons that when we were able to get a good plan in place, we operated on it. So, you know, again, we support people's First Amendment free speech rights, but we certainly can't condone or promote lawlessness in any area of the city.
Thank you, Chief. Our next question will be from Simone Del Rosario, 213 News, followed by David Douglas, NBC News. Simone, the floor is yours.
I'd like to follow up on what Hannah was talking about there for the mayor or for the chief. There's conversation on the ground about moving the occupation elsewhere. What will the city's response be if these protesters decide to occupy elsewhere? Will you allow them to set up camp like they did outside the East Precinct, as long as there's not that lawlessness that the chief just mentioned?
So again, I want to echo what the chief said, is we strongly support the First Amendment rights to protest, and we have seen that in Seattle over the last 3 weeks, where tens of thousands of people have taken to the streets, sometimes in one march, and we will be guided by each situation as it presents itself. We will support the right of free speech, but we will not support the right of people who are creating a situation like we had on Capitol Hill that ended up in violence and disorder in the way that it did.
Thank you, Mayor. Our next question will be from David Douglas, NBC News, followed by Kara Kostanich, Como 4. David, the floor is yours.
Thank you. I would like to just echo my colleague's question from previous mayor and ask what you would do if there is another attempt at an occupation in the city. And also ask, you noticed the K-Rail traffic barrier that's gone up to line the corner that defines the East Precinct here on Capitol Hill. Are you preparing, Chief Best, to have to defend the precinct for some time to come when protesters inevitably return?
So I think those are three questions, but let's see. I'll let Chief Best ask the one. But look, every protest situation and act of civil disobedience, we respond to as the circumstances allow and permit. And so it's hard to predict with every hypothetical. We've had all sorts of protests in Seattle, just not over the last 3 weeks, but over many years. And so we will be guided by what the situation on the ground is. And Chief Bess and her troops have been trained strongly in how to respond. And if it affects other city departments, we will look at that time. We've had protests, for example, almost every evening at the West Precinct, which other than some property damage cases have gone on and has not required operations like we saw today. So we will be guided by what the circumstances are. We don't anticipate at this point. We think that with the streets open, we're hopeful that Seattle Capitol Hill can return to normal, that businesses can open, that everyone can enjoy that park. It's going to take us some time to restore the park and actually reopen the park. So I think that I will let the chief address what their plans are for the East Precinct.
Yeah, in the short term, the mayor's order is still in effect for the next 10 days, and people are not allowed in the area that are not residents or business owners into the area as we affect precinct cleanup and some street closure cleanup and other things that are occurring both with FAS, SDOT, Parks Department, Human Services, and some of the folks who will be who are here at the press conference. So we're going to be working with everybody to make sure that we open up the area. You know, you choose the word inevitable. I don't know that that's necessarily accurate. That's certainly your assumption. But we do know, again, that we support people's First Amendment free speech right. We're going to make sure that we try to expedite and help people in that process. But again, if people hunger in and there's lawlessness, you know, then we have to react and respond. I think that's what you're really asking. And like I said before, and I'll repeat, you know, there's not going to be a situation ever as a police chief where we're going to be okay with illegal acts in the city. So we're going to work really hard to make sure that we keep all of our community safe that lives there.
Thank you, Mayor, and thank you, Chief. Our next question will be from Kara Kostanich, followed by our final question from Rachel Abrams at New York Times. Kara, the floor is yours.
And this is a question following up on a couple of other questions we've heard. Chief Best, can you specifically address what the plan will be for protecting the East Precinct or other SPD facilities to make sure they aren't targeted again? Perhaps will you have boots on the ground outside these facilities?
Well, certainly we're going to have an additional presence in and around the East Precinct and other areas. Is as the mayor said earlier, we're going to respond as the situation presents itself to us. And the best way that we can to make sure that we provide public safety to everyone involved. So that generally is the plan. In some cases that might mean additional resources. In some cases it may not. So all of that is going to be determined based on what we're presented with in the area. And we do know, as you know, I confirmed earlier, that we did get some indication from the FBI's Federal Bureau of Investigation that there were threats to police precincts and to government facilities. And certainly we're taking all of that very seriously. I know there was a question about that. So we verified that, and that information came from our local special agent in charge of the FBI. So we're always keeping a watchful eye for any potential threat to any of our facilities at all times.
Thank you very much, Chief. And it seems as though our last question has been withdrawn. So I'm going to turn it back over to you, Mayor, if you have any closing thoughts for us.
Again, I want to thank the city departments who worked not just this morning, but over the last several weeks to really provide a level of services to support protesters, to try to create public safety. We saw as the area deteriorated, particularly at night, we needed a different response. We tried different responses, and it was clear that we could not restore the area and have the level of public safety we needed until the protesters were moved, the streets were open. I want to also thank all of the people who raised their voices in protest to challenge our city, our state, and our country to be better. If all we remember from the last few weeks is what happened in those few blocks on Capitol Hill, we've missed the point. We've missed the point entirely. The murder of Mr. Floyd ignited a movement across the globe. But that movement was because of years and centuries of systemic racism. It resonated in the bones of so many people. And here in Seattle, we saw for the first time many people standing up loudly to stand with their Black neighbors to say, enough is enough. We must do better. I've heard that. I believe it. And as mayor, that will be my focus, to make those changes, to dismantle the systemic racism, to build hope, and to build true community safety by investing in those communities and making every person part of that dream that Dr. Martin Luther King had for us all. Thank you very much.